Paul Tierney has been caught in this new pre-match ritual that Chelsea have of going around and huddling around the ball on the centre spot. They've been doing that for a few weeks now. People have noticed recently. And Paul Tierney is caught in the middle there. Sorry to interrupt, Chris. This is quite unusual.
I've never seen the referee involved.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Only Terry this week, back from our spring break. Yeah, we always have a week off in March, don't we, Terry? Usually coincides with us going away for the weekend, going off to foreign climes to go and watch a football match. But not this year. We just thought, let's just put our feet up. We've got a long summer coming up. We need to keep our energy levels going, don't we? Because it's a long season, and with the World Cup coming up, it's just going to be relentless, isn't it, Terry?
It is going to be fairly relentless, Cham, yeah. Our last regular season could be very late May, possibly even early June, depending on how the doings do.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if Arsenal win the Champions League, we might have to come back and have a hooray for Graham and Arsenal and all of that stuff. Then we're piling into the World Cup, and then that lasts forever. I've looked at the fixtures. It didn't occur to me until I was looking at the fixtures and thinking, my God, there's so many games. I'm not going to be able to watch all of these games.
Yeah.
Now, in the past, I have been able to contrive a way, listeners, with a degree of gymnastics, of watching almost every game in the World Cup. That is not happening for this one. We can talk about this close to the time, but yeah, just to underline, it's going to be a long season. So yeah, a week off was actually quite nice, although it was chomping at the bit to return. I have takes, Graham. I have takes.
Well, we have so much to discuss. A whole weekend's full of football first. There's all the Champions League stuff that happened last week as well. And there's loads of controversy involving African football. Oh my God, what the earth is going on there? And of course, Chelsea as well. Chelsea, you know, who as a club appear to be leaning in to the running narrative that we've had on this podcast all season. Because what are they, Terry? What are Chelsea?
All this season, we have been saying that Chelsea are a really awful football club.
They are.
They are really awful.
And I think they just love that. I think someone in there has heard that and said, yeah, that's us. That's our USP now. Because it just seems everything they do now just amplifies just how awful they are.
Basically, that's not surprising because, of course, they kind of admitted, they literally admitted, you know, we're a really awful football club. Look, here is the evidence of just how awful we are, and submitted it to the Premier League to say, look, look how awful our football club is. And the Premier League went, God, yeah, that is awful. What are we going to do about that?
Well, we'll tell you what they did, listeners. Well, you obviously know already, but we will discuss that later in the show. But first, obviously, we have to talk about what happened at the weekend. And we'll start with the League Cup final. Yes, disappointing. The quadruple is off. Not that it was really on anyway. The quadruples are not easy things to do. Plenty of really, really successful teams have not got closer to winning quadruples. So unsurprising that Arsenal haven't won anything in a few years now, will not be getting the quadruple this season. The old nemesis of the League Cup came back to haunt them again. They are terrible in that competition in finals and lost yet another one, and deservedly as well. They didn't really do enough to win it on the day. Just shame that it was against Man City, really. Terry, I hope you found something more interesting to do than watch that terrible football game.
Oh, you know, I did actually have that terrible football game on my screen and I was just like doing other things, possibly playing on my Nintendo Switch. I think I was actually having more fun playing the old N64 version of GoldenEye 007 than I was watching that game, but you know.
Yeah, listeners, if you don't listen to our sister podcast, The Odd Job Pod, you may not know the fact that Terry and I did a podcast on the old N64 game GoldenEye 007, and we talked about it for over an hour with Gary Andrews about how much we love it. And Terry has now bought a Nintendo Switch just so he can play it. Haven't you?
Yeah. That's not an exaggeration. I bought that so that I could play a game that is 31 years old. 31 years old. I know, yeah. I have got other games for it too, but not many others.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for the next James Bond game to come out, which won't be out till May.
It's an appetizer, isn't it, really?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. See how quickly we managed to get away from the League Cup final. I don't know if there's anything more to say about it, really. We only produce half an hour of content a week, so we don't really have to fill up our time with explaining about what it all means, because it was a game of football that ended in Arsenal losing and Man City winning. Man City didn't dominate, Arsenal didn't create. That's basically it, really. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair, but I would imagine that online Arsenal fans are getting sufficiently hysterical about it and what it means. Because there are few art groups of online fans more narrative focused than Arsenal fans. But in reality, I don't think it's going to have any bearing on the title race or indeed Arsenal's opportunities or possibilities of winning further silverware later in the season. It is a game of football that they lost. There will be others. Another one coming along in about a week or so's time. So it's fine.
Yeah, well, we've got an international break coming up now as well. So we don't have any club football for a good week or so. It's going to be ages before the next Premier League game as well, because we come straight back into the FA Cup. So, yeah, international break coming up, stopping football for a little while and then starting up again and just making everyone excited about what's left of the season. And there is still plenty enough to get excited about, isn't there, Terry? There's still all the Champions League stuff. Now, a bit more pared down for English interests, isn't it? It's a lot more easy to get your head around. Six teams was far too many. Two, much more manageable.
This feels more like a traditional European competition, doesn't it? The further along you go with European competitions, the more authentic and enjoyable and intriguing they become. And yeah, now we're at the quarterfinal stage. Yeah, to be at this point where we've gone from 6-2 is quite funny and has got a lot of people wondering and thinking about what it means for English football. But again, this is what happens. Football teams lose football matches. And bearing in mind that one of those six teams was Tottenham, makes you understand the situation a little bit better. Arsenal, I think, can be pleased with a draw against Sporting. You always hesitate to see who the weakest teams are in there. But I think that, you know, if you are looking for silver linings in a draw, then you would perhaps think, well, maybe a Portuguese league team might be a better one. But we could probably say that it's going to require miracle levels of miracleness for Liverpool to find their way past PSG. PSG are going to have to do something very French to avoid losing that tie over two legs. I mean, you know, miracles happen, particularly in football and particularly with Liverpool in the Champions League. So drama, ahoy, I would say. You got any thoughts as to who might win the big cup? Any of your personal favourites?
Well, I thought PSG looked amazing going through the other night. Real Madrid doing Real Madrid things as well. I'm really looking forward to Real Bayern. I think that's got tired around potential there. What else we've got? We've got Barcelona Atleti, which we've already had a semi-final of that in the Copa del Rey. I think they're playing next weekend as well. So they're going to know a lot about each other already. So maybe that one hasn't got a lot of magic there, but yeah, I mean, Liverpool-PSG is going to be brilliant, obviously. But Bayern, I think they'll have Real. What do you think?
I think that Bayern will have Real on this occasion, yeah. The Bundesliga, I think, is almost done. And I think that they will be mentally ready for it. Not watched as much Real, but Bayern are in a really, really good form. And they've been in great form in the Champions League. I think that it is Real. And you can never rule them out, never rule them out. And that sounds cliche, but really in this competition, there's an argument to say that it's theirs and other people just win it. And other people win Real Madrid's competition. So there's a lot of that going on. But I think this Bayern team, if any, is capable, I think, of getting past them. And then for me, you know, they would be quite clear favourites to take the title, to win the whole thing. But yeah, two punishing legs against a resolute Real Madrid side. that for me, that's the tie of the round. I will be absolutely laser focused on those two games.
Yeah, I think the winner of the title is going to be whoever makes it out of that half of the draw. So you've got Real, Bayern and Liverpool, PSG. I think whoever wins that is going to be a worthy finalist and a lot more hardened, I think, than any of the teams on the other side. The minor footnote of Arsenal taking on Sporting and also with Forest taking on, I think, Porto, isn't it, in their next round, is that just one of those English clubs needs to get past their Portuguese opposition to guarantee the fifth Champions League place. It's pretty much nailed on anyway, but that will actually rubber stamp it. Portugal will not be able to overtake us if either Arsenal or Forest knock their opponents out of the next round. Which means fifth place, like it was this season, is going to be a Champions League position. And I've got to say, Terry, with the way Chelsea, Liverpool and Villa, I mean, Villa did win at the weekend, but none of them are really ending the season in style, are they? And there are teams in the mid-table that are slowly creeping up behind. The gap is closing, isn't it? And so we could end up with someone like Everton getting in the Champions League this season.
From a neutral perspective, I think it would be a tremendous story to see Everton sneak into that Champions League and get that fifth spot. I think that would be amazing. I mean, you're right. I mean, Liverpool and Chelsea and Villa, they've all got some variety of wrongness about them. Liverpool have got all manner of different kinds of problems. But I mean, you could probably just say, like, defensively, they just seem to have fallen apart. Organisationally, they're no good. Goodness knows what's happening at Chelsea. More on that later. And Villa, I mean, Villa have just been playing roulette outside the box for all season now, defying the XG and just going for it. And it's been paying off for them. But it's, you know, can they see that through all the way through to the end of the season? I'm not altogether sure. So there's definitely a place, you know, for Moyes. I'm sure, you know, even Jan would not begrudge. What am I saying?
No, he'd love it. I mean, here, we'll have to speak for him and say Jan would give that his big thumbs up and say, yeah, that's great. Good for Moyes. That's what he'd say.
Good on you, Moyesy boy, he'd say.
Yes.
Good for you, mate. Or let bygones be bygones. That's Jan's motto.
Yes.
He's not one to hold a grudge.
Not at all. It's interesting what's happened to Villa because, Villa were performing above the numbers all the way through the first two-thirds of the season, really. If you go to Understat, you'll see all, like, expected goals, expected points and things like that. And they were mid-table. They were not where they should be. And I suppose a lot of it was the fact that they were knocking in screamers pretty much every game from outside the box. And I suppose if those dry up, then all of a sudden your points are a lot harder to come by. But you look at what's happened to them this season, up in the top for most of it and then falling down at the end. They're kind of having the same season that Forest had last season. And if you have a season like that, what you don't want to do is have the sort of season that Forest are having this season.
No, absolutely. I would like to think that Villa have enough about them to be aware of the kind of season that they're having and that they will be able to take steps during the summertime to try and arrest that, because you won't be able to achieve your goals just by playing football like that, just by playing out on the edge as much as Villa do. And it has been tremendous. And this is not to say they are undeserving at all. They're playing well and they're getting rewards for it. But over the course of a season, you're not altogether certain that it's going to work out, and carrying it over to the next season, I think it's going to be a bit of a problem for them. Interestingly, Graham, looking at the expected points, the last time I looked at the expected points, and this explains also why our colleague and his uptightness about Sunderland is because they are expected points, they're third bottom, Sunderland.
Yeah.
So they've also got some work to do in the summertime in order to be able to get their own, which does explain why Jan is probably quite right to be uptight, because he watches them, of course, far more than we do, and probably instinctively understands this. So, beware the lessons of Nottingham Forest, who, dropped off a cliff and only managed to get into the Europa League because they're dirty, stinking grasses. In fairness, they're making a great fist of it. But that team, when you watch that team play, you think, well, how on earth is this team so poor because of the players that it's got? It is weird, but at the same time, I think the problems that they've had at Forest, they've had the problems with their sporting director, I think is quite well known. Marinakis perhaps leading the transfer policy and maybe not necessarily being the sort of like dedicated full-time professional that you might need to be able to do that. And of course, there were lots of managerial changes that they have at that club. They do like the chaos there. It does work for them to a certain degree, but then it's backfired for them this season. I mean, like, they may, ironically, they may well go on, win the Europa League, qualify for the Champions League, and then finish fifth from bottom and actually play in the Champions League next season. And so no one could say, oh, it's been a terrible season for Forest. But actually, it has. That's just the weirdness of the Premier League and just how weird qualifying and easy it is to qualify for some competitions.
Forest did have a fantastic result at the weekend, though, didn't they? A great 3-0 win away from home. Who saw that coming?
Well, judging by them making for the exits at half-time, Tottenham Hotspur fans, I think, saw that coming. A bit of an exaggeration. It wasn't quite as bad as when they lost to Palace. But, I mean, I was thinking about this, Graham, and I was thinking, because they're talking, what, this is a six-pointer, right? We know what six-pointers are. We've seen enough of them down the year to know what a six-pointer is. But we also, what hadn't occurred to me until I was watching this is all like, I also understand what it is like to watch a six-pointer and what they are, what kind of games they are. They're tight, they're chaotic, they're ugly, and they're usually close. Because even if a team's playing out of form, they will do something to drag the opponents down. I mean, they can be physical and ugly and, like, you know, ill-disciplined. But Tottenham had none of those qualities in their side to be able to play such a game. They didn't embrace the fact that this is a six-pointer. And I think a lot of that is probably because, realistically, they haven't played a six-pointer since, I want to say, the early days of the Premier League, when they were last in big trouble and almost got relegated. They wouldn't have played one last year because they were, even though they finished like fourth from bottom, they were never going down. But this year, like, you just looked at that side and say, you don't know how to play this kind of game. Mm. And Forest did. You know, they know how to play a six-pointer, and that's why it was so one-sided. It was a really odd game to witness, to be honest. And you have to say, and we say every time we talk about Tottenham, we keep saying it almost incredulously, but there have to be favourites to be relegated now, because I know West Ham lost, but they lost to Villa. I think West Ham will continue to pick up points, but there's a scenario where I can't see Tottenham even getting maybe a point or 2 points. It just doesn't seem at this point like anything can save them, short of Man City getting relegated or something like that.
West Ham still are just slightly ahead of them in the odds.
Right.
I honestly don't know how, because you're right, losing away to Villa 2-0 is no shame. And it sounded like West Ham gave them a game. But most bookies have them as evens to go down. And right. Tottenham just slightly longer than that. But I look at the run in there and I think, where are your points coming from? They're away to Sunderland in the next round of Premier League fixtures, almost 3 weeks away now. Not the easiest place to win. Brighton seem to be hitting form again. Very difficult team to beat. Wolves, they've still got some fight in them for some reason. Away to Villa. Villa have something to play for. And if they play Leeds and put the same performance like they did at home to Forest, they're going to lose again.
Mm.
Because Leeds are going to come down there and they're not going to put up with that. And they are going to go back up the M1 with 3 points, aren't they?
Yeah, I think Leeds will metaphorically and perhaps actually beat them up. They are a team that is in there. It might well be that Leeds are out of it and they might, by that point, they might be safe. And in which case, you know, it's possible that they might then take their foot off the gas. And we do sometimes see that with teams. But I don't know. I think Daniel Farke's got that team pretty woundly tight. I'm not certain that that would happen. But sometimes it can happen.
Yeah.
But it's very, very difficult. You know, you can just about see, well, like Sunderland got a great result, obviously, yesterday, but they haven't been that good. That's a possibility. You don't know with Villa. You don't know. But the thing is, what you do know is that Tottenham are terrible and are playing with no confidence whatsoever and no, it would appear, no belief in themselves at this point. And that may well be enough. And I just feel that West Ham will just pick up points between now and the end of the season. They will just pick up points because they've kind of got it going on. Yeah, it is. I mean, I think the bookies are probably right to make it that close, but Yeah, it's only by dint of the fact that West Ham are currently in the bottom three and there's only a finite number of games left that's probably the difference maker. And also, there's probably the markets are we telling them something as well, you know, what the markets are doing.
Yeah. The glimmer of hope for Tottenham is the fact that their penultimate game, their last away game, is against Chelsea. And if anyone is going to spoil everyone's fun, it's going to be Chelsea not turning up for their last home game of the season and letting Tottenham win and staying up. Because they're that awful, aren't they?
Well, see, that's where the bookies have gone for, haven't they? There. They'll win at Chelsea. That's how it's going to go. Because that's, yes.
And, of course, their last game of the season is at home to Everton. And, of course, knowing Everton, if they've got a chance of getting in the Champions League, away to Tottenham, that's a rake that they themselves will want to step on, isn't it?
We've seen it happen before.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true. So it won't be anything to do with Tottenham. It'll be to do with their opponents not showing up, turning up at the wrong stadium by mistake.
Well, let's give the listeners what they want to hear. Let's talk a bit more about Chelsea and about how they are proving to be every bit as awful as we've been describing them for, well, all season long. There was some news, wasn't there, last week? A bit of a callback to a previous episode, wasn't it?
Well, we knew they had been found guilty, or they were even being investigated for illegal payments during the Roman Abramovich period of time. So that was basically during the last decade of making a significant number of payments for many millions of pounds, signing illegally, it turns out, a number of very, very highly regarded players, not least Eden Hazard, Andre Schürrle, David Luiz, good players being signed at interesting times and really elevating Chelsea Football Club to the position that people have now seem to become accustomed to seeing them playing there. They are now the super club that they weren't beforehand. Chelsea's rise under Abramovich's leadership and ownership was done illegally. Or that isn't to say in contravention with the rules. It's probably maybe a less inflammatory way of saying it. And so they were punished. And what were they punished by, I wonder? Well, they were punished by being fined 10-something million pounds.
Yeah.
Which is a derisory amount. It's almost nothing. And then they have a one-year transfer embargo suspended, which is, yeah. I mean, I don't know what you think, Graham. I feel as though it's a bit of a slap in the face, to be honest with you. I don't think that that is a just punishment, given the scale of the task. I appreciate there's mitigating circumstances, but I still don't feel that that is just.
It's not even a slap on the wrist for Chelsea.
Barely a slap on the wrist for Chelsea, but a slap in the face to Chelsea's opponents. Yeah.
Yeah. It's no surprise that the Premier League have done this, mainly because they painted themselves into a corner as far as punishing clubs are concerned. Everton should be absolutely bloody livid with this. And I've heard somewhere that the figure that they were actually fined was so they didn't go over PSR. Which is,
I mean, so they accommodated Chelsea with this.
Yeah, yeah. They said, how much can we fine them without actually making it possible that we could take any points off them?
Hmm.
So that's that. There is still FA punishment to come, but whether or not the FA will do anything now that they've already been fined, I honestly don't know.
I think the thing is once the Premier League have made their determination and made their punishment, then I think the FA will probably be governed by the tone and the extent of the punishment by the Premier League and act accordingly, in which case then we're probably talking about not much. At this point, the Chelsea fans, those that still listen to this podcast, and there can't be many at this point because, you know, we like to have a bit of fun with our really awful football club, but it is actually sincerely felt. And I think that becomes clear. This is not a Chelsea podcast. Chelsea fans will say, but hang on though, because it's a self-report. And the new owners, when they came in, they realised what had happened either before they took over or shortly after they took over, and they reported, they grasped themselves up. And this is what is being used by the Premier League as sort of the mitigating circumstances to say that they shouldn't be made to suffer unduly because it happened under a previous regime. Now, that's news to me.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say, that is news to me, and that is an interesting precedent, and I'm sure that there will be sports lawyers for future clubs who get themselves into trouble who will say, hang on though, And then they will go back and cite this and say, well, look, so I really think that the Premier League have kind of shot themselves in the foot here. When you look at Everton, obviously, they did break the rules. I think when you look at Everton, you look at Leicester historically, and it's in a different league, admittedly. But you look at Sheffield Wednesday now, these clubs are the victims of useless owners who have either been incompetent or they've massively overreached.
Yeah.
This is not cheating. This is just incompetence and overreach. And they got punished quite severely. Forest, dare I say, Forest was the other one as well. You know, again, Marinakis is many things. Actually, I'm going to stop short there. I was going to say he's not a cheat. I don't know. I'm not sure whether or not I'm quite willing to say that. But Forest were a deductive point. I would argue that their punishment was just. Yeah. And I think that that seems to be the way things are. You know, I think about Sheffield Wednesday fans right now who are sitting there thinking, they're probably going to get another 15-point deduction to start next season down in League One because the new owner is taking the club out of administration without settling 100% of football debts. And I think the reason for that is because part of those football debts are due to the previous owner, who understandably nobody wants to give any more money to than they possibly can, because he's a really awful person who almost killed their football club and may yet kill their football club as well. They must look at that and say, well, how is this just? And you can spend all day, we could spend the rest of this podcast talking about the different circumstances between what Chelsea have done and what Everton did, what Forest did, what Leicester did, what Sheffield Wednesday did. But it doesn't matter, because this is about justice and it's about fairness. Look, what is a fair and just punishment for widespread cheating that has earned you trophies, earned you titles, earned you your status, all on the back of cheating? I'd say that really, you know, justice would be to send you back to where you came from, which would be a club on the verge of administration that was overachieving, which is basically what Chelsea were before Abramovich took over. I mean, but that's not going to happen. But I think a deduction, a points deduction to start next season, I think would have been just. Or a transfer embargo at the absolute minimum would have been perfectly just. But a fine?
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't feel right at all.
It doesn't. There is a suspended transfer embargo. Yeah.
Well, Chelsea aren't going to break the rules, though, are they? What we do know is that the Chelsea are unlikely to break the rules as they currently stand. They might find a way. They might find ways of breaking the rules, but we've got no indication. We've given no indication whatsoever that the current owners, I mean, like, are anything other than just guys who are. I think they try and game the system for sure, but I don't. There's no reason to assume that these guys are perennial cheats. I think it's arguable that they could conceivably have kept their mouth shut and not self-reported, although they probably looked at the scale of it and thought, well, if we don't declare this now, then they really will come after us. But there's clearly, this has been an agreement. It's a sanction agreement. That's literally what it's called, isn't it? It's called the sanction agreement. And that's what's happened here. And it just stinks. You know, I mean, it's deeply, deeply annoying.
Yeah, it screams a plea bargain, doesn't it?
Yeah.
There is one way they could get out of it. The FA could fine Roman Abramovich to the tune of $2.5 billion, the amount of money he's got frozen in a British bank account so that can't go anywhere until he decides where it's going to go to. The money that he promised to victims of the Ukrainian war.
Yeah, that one. Yeah.
But will be funneled straight back to Russia.
That would be a good idea. And again, for those remaining Chelsea fans or your masochistic Chelsea fans who love to listen to people trashing your football club in the way that we've just done, also just bear in mind, by rights, Chelsea should no longer exist. It was nationalised after Roman Abramovich's assets were frozen. It was effectively nationalised by the UK government because it wasn't seen as being in the public interest in allowing that club to go. But by any other convention and custom, any other kind of business in any kind of corporate sector, that club would have just disappeared. Now, it didn't happen, and it was right. The UK government were right to nationalise Chelsea and to keep it going. But it is worth pointing out that this is a club that has benefited hugely in the past from kindness and generosity. And I feel as though this just doesn't sit right, unfortunately. And so, fine, if we're going to go down this road, then what we want to see is we want to see fewer points deductions, and we want to see a completely different approach to how football clubs are governed, if that's how it's going to be. Let's punish football clubs less. Let's not punish Chelsea more. Let's give Everton and Forest their points back at the start of next season. Let's not take Sheffield Wednesday's points away at the start of next season. Let's rethink the entire process and see whether or not there's a more conciliatory way of dealing with these kind of problems.
Except for Chelsea.
Except for Chelsea, who should be relegated twice.
Twice?
Twice, twice.
Oh,
yes,
twice,
correct,
twice.
Graham. Twice, twice.
Yes. Yeah. Well, see, we didn't even talk about the huddles, did we?
No, we didn't talk about the huddles, did we? I mean, let's not talk about the huddles. Except, can I just say, when I saw that picture for the first time, first I saw that picture, it was Aid, a listener on our Whiteleaf WhatsApp group. And I thought, Aid, did Aid do that? Because that's just rubbish. I thought it was shopped. And then when I went onto social media, I saw a video of it and I thought it was shit AI.
Yeah.
It looked so wrong. I couldn't believe that it is something that had actually happened. None of them had bothered to go over to the guy and said, look, unfortunately, it's a bit embarrassing, but we want to do a huddle around the centre spot. Is that okay? Do you mind just giving us, is that all right? And like the ref would have gone, yeah, fine. He's not going to say no, is he? He'd have gone, yeah, right, yeah, no worries. I'll just go and stand over there. You go and do your thing. You do you, guys. No worries.
And no, Ed, what happened was that Tinny says, no, you're not going to do this on the centre spot. And he said,
really?
I'm going to stand there by there. And if you're going to do it, you're going to do it around me. And that's apparently what happened.
Oh, my God. That's even funnier. Because not only does it just... Because the whole thing reeks of, I think it was Chris New, sort of like, you can't be the only one. Whole thing reeks of kind of, you know, Liam Rosinia high performance kind of stuff, isn't it?
It's so LinkedIn, isn't it?
Someone is listening to the wrong podcast. Very, very definitely. But for Tierney to say no as well, I mean, that's just weapons grade. Not, you know, I mean, come on, just... You know, I would have gone, well, this is irregular, guys, but yeah, all right, fair enough. You know, I just keep it quick, yeah? And then, but no, it's just, what's happening to people, Graham?
What is happening?
I don't understand what's happening to people.
Well, I wonder how many Chelsea supporters actually work in CAF. Because just when you thought it couldn't get any more awful, we suddenly realised that who we thought had won this year's AFCON was not the team that had won AFCON, was it, Terry?
No, the team that we thought had won AFCON was the team that we saw win the game and lift the trophy, which was Senegal. But apparently not. Yeah, no, apparently we have gone Formula One. It's happened.
Oh.
Formula One has finally arrived at football. We are now deciding results posthumously. Posthumously? That's not the right word. Retrospectively. Sorry. I suppose posthumously. Yeah. You could say the game is gone.
The game has gone.
The game is gone. Yeah, no. Morocco have now been awarded the Africa Cup of Nations on account of contravention of the law in that when Senegal stormed off the pitch, which, you know, there's an argument to say they shouldn't have done that. Strong argument, but they did. That they forfeited the match 3-0. And that's what they're saying. That's what the assembled lawyers have said.
Interestingly, the wording of the rules actually says if they leave the ground.
Rather than the pitch.
Yeah, because it's been poorly translated from French to English. But even so, I think Sadio Mane didn't actually leave the pitch. So technically a lawyer would say, well, actually the team didn't leave. There was at least one player left on the pitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is going to CAS. And if you listen back to the podcast that we did at the end of January, after the end of the tournament, you'll know all about what Morocco have been up to for years now, actually, in the way that African football is run. It is basically run for them. And so this is no surprise that CAF themselves have suddenly decided to award the title to Morocco, making complete arses out of themselves.
Yeah.
It really is. And it's just making African football just look ridiculous. Just when it was coming out of a lot of the most negative things that people think about African football, it seemed that had passed and it was only positivity. But no, Morocco have just
pissed all over that, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah. And they don't deserve anything other than getting the World Cup stripped from them. That's what they deserve.
That should definitely happen, but that is obviously not going to happen.
Of course it's not.
It's just unbelievable. I mean, really, I would suggest that that rule really applies to, I would say, probably grassroots and lower division football in the event where you're probably playing with part-timers, where lack of discipline might be an issue, and it's just to deter teams from, you know, losing their shits completely and walking off the pitch and not coming back. And apart from anything else, the game is over when the referee blows the whistle. If the referee has decided that the team has forfeited, then it's the referee who makes that decision on the pitch, there and then. That's how football works. It's not decided retrospectively. That's not how... I can't believe that this has been allowed to go through. And I hate to say it, because nobody really likes to sort of like sit in judgment of African football and of Africans making decisions about their football. But I promise you, this wouldn't have got nowhere near any kind of UEFA ruling or anything like that. FIFA, CONCACAF, you know, AFC. Nobody would have really have taken something like this in. Not even the Qataris or the Saudis would have the balls to try and pull something like this off. It's just appalling from Morocco. I mean, you know, they've got the World Cup host. They should be satisfied with that. If they can't do enough to win, you know, on the pitch yet, then they will get there. They will, you know, at some point, Morocco will dominate African football on the pitch as they do off of it, because they've got this fantastic program that they're pumping millions of dollars into to bring out. They've got brilliant players. They've got more players coming down the track. They are going to be good. They're going to be great, Morocco. There's no need for this. It's just pathetic.
Yeah, I struggle to think where the punishment is going to come from, because I can't see it coming from FIFA, because they are upcoming hosts of a World Cup, and because Infantino is an awful person. Yeah, so he's not going to do anything. So you have to rely on CAS to do something, and really they're just lawyers, and they may agree with the decision that has come up. Really, it's football that should turn on this. It's football that should be saying, look, no, this is wrong. We cannot have this because it's not good for the game.
Yeah.
People will look at this and think, well, this game is a joke. As you say, F1, it's not about what actually happens. What you see with your eyes, it's actually what happens in a locked room afterwards.
Yes. And in fact, F1 have been doing an awful lot of work to try and stop stuff like that from happening because they know how stupid it looks.
Yeah.
It's really incredibly disappointing. I mean, yes, suspend Senegal, you know, ban Senegal, fine them huge amounts of money. All of these things, I think, are on the table as something that you could have done. But like taking it away from them, I mean, like, that's the ref's call. The ref decides whether or not something like that has happened, and they didn't. And let's face it, it was probably a hand-picked ref from the Moroccan FA. So really, they have absolutely no complaints. I mean, like, how is Brahim Diaz going to feel better about his penalty miss because of this? No, he's not, is he? If anything, they're all going to feel a little bit more stupid because they're probably going to be given these medals that, you know, deep down they know they have not earned. They've not won. I mean, it's unbelievable. We're speechless.
We are speechless. I think that's probably a good time to like stop talking, because it's just turning into a rant, isn't it, really, now?
It is, yes. But the Moroccan FA have rendered the Sound of Football podcast mute.
Yeah, which is probably quite good, because I haven't got my normal outro here, because it's an international break this weekend, so we're not doing a weekend box set. Yes, I know. We took a week off the pod last week, and we're taking a week off the box set this week. Yeah, that's how we roll, listeners. Half the amount of content that we normally do for a couple of weeks. This is lovely. Yeah, we should do this more often, shouldn't we, Terry?
Yeah, we should say the word, chum.
Of course, there is plenty of football to watch. There's WSL to watch. I'll be at the Emirates on Saturday. There's international football, plenty of international football to watch. And it's all friendlies as well, isn't it? So it's nothing too worrying as well to watch.
It's for the World Cup qualifiers, you know.
Yeah, there's the playoffs. Yeah,
Northern Ireland are playing Italy. Wales are playing whoever Wales are playing, you know.
Yeah, that's fine. That's lovely. Yeah. Good luck to them.
So there's Chelsea fans, Moroccan fans. Welsh people, Northern Irish people. Anyone else we got? And there's only two of us, and we've managed to alienate four cohorts of our listeners.
Terry, there's 48 teams going to this World Cup. If you can't qualify for it, I mean, how? You must be bloody awful, mustn't you, really?
Chew. Yeah. And best of luck to Sweden as well on their qualifying journey as well. Graham Potter's Sweden.
See, it's not all negative, is it?
No.
But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, and from Terry DeVillan, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Are you noticing that too? Yeah, you're pulsing.